Did you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur. Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 115 of The Law Entrepreneur. I'm Neil Tyra, your host, once again. And today I am delighted to welcome back to the show David Sparks. That name sounds familiar. It should. David was a guest way back on episode number 26 when we talked about how he transitioned from his old firm to a solo practice. And what made it particularly interesting, if you know anything about the Apple world, you know that David's nom de plume is Mac Sparky. He's a prolific author, aside from being an attorney, on all things Apple. And he is indeed the host of a very popular podcast called Mac Power Users, which frankly is the podcast that I started listening to first and got me in the mode of thinking that I would like to do a podcast is listening to him and another guest, previous guest of ours, Katie Floyd. They co-host Mac Power Users. But the episode back in episode 26 talked about his transition to solo practice. So I urge you, if you didn't hear that, to go back and listen to that. And then you can hear all about how David came to be where he is today. Today, we're going to talk about his new multimedia field guide, which is called the iPhone Field Guide. And it's all about everything, you know, iPhone. Now, if you're not a Mac user, I know many of you use Windows-based systems, maybe at work and maybe also at home, but you also have an iPhone in your pocket or an iPad that you use outside of work, or maybe you've learned how to make the two systems work together. So this is not an episode solely for Mac users or Apple fanboys like myself. I think you'll get a lot out of it just listening, even if you don't use a Mac. But if you do have an iPhone or an iPad, you'll certainly get more value out of it. So we're going to talk about all things iPhone here with David Sparks. David Sparks, a.k.a. Mac Sparky, welcome back to The Law Entrepreneur.
Thanks, Neil. Really happy to be back.
Well, I'm delighted you could come back and join us. As we were saying, it's been a little over a year since you were last on the show. So we'll dispense with the tell us about yourself and how you came to where you are today, and just tell our audience to go back and listen to the first episode to hear the long, sordid story of how David became to be where he is today. But what I want to talk about, Dave, is all the hats that you wear. You wear a lot of them.
I certainly do.
You know, and I'm not so sure which one, you know, is the biggest hat.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I'm making a mistake that most people will tell you should never do, is I'm doing two things. You know, I'm a business lawyer, but I'm also a guy who writes tech books and does geeky podcasts and talks about productivity. And all my friends on the geek side say, I don't understand why you're wasting your time on that law practice. Right. All my lawyer friends say, I don't understand why you're wasting time on that other thing. For me, you know, I've actually thought about it a lot because I quit my firm several years ago and thought, well, is this a sign that I'm eventually going to stop practicing law? And it's really not, because fundamentally, I get motivations from both sides of my life. I really enjoy being a lawyer. I'm a weirdo in that way, but, you know, people come to me with difficult problems. I help them solve them. And I find it very fulfilling to help, you know, help my clients. On the flip side, on the Max Barkey stuff, I help people as well, a lot more people in a lot smaller ways. So right. I get the big feels from the legal clients and the small feels from a whole bunch of Max Barkey readers and fans and whatever. And so I have something that I get from both things that I like, which is why I struggle with this balance of trying to figure out, you know, where do I spend my time today?
And not to minimize it, you also have a family.
Yeah, I do. Yeah. So,
yeah. And as we all know, that draws a lot of resources from the pool. So
yeah.
I get tired just thinking about all the things that you do. I had somebody ask me the other day, well, what do you plan on doing the longest, being an attorney or podcasting? And I had never pondered that question that way. You know,
yeah,
people, that's a good question. People will ask you maybe, you know, why you do this or why you do that. But she asked me, what do you plan on doing the longest? And I had to give that a lot of thought. I haven't come up with an answer yet. But in any case, to say that you are an author is a bit of an understatement. I mean, you write the Max Barkey blog, which I read religiously. And you also have a whole host of field guides. So tell us a little bit about, you know, the field guides specifically, because we want to talk about your latest one in detail.
Yeah. You know, I started the first books I wrote were traditional, you know, books through a publisher. You know, they were the iPad at workbook and the Mac at workbook that I wrote for Wiley Press, and they were in Barnes and Noble, and I felt like I was very fancy at the time. But I, even when I was doing the work for the big publisher, I realized, number one, tech writers are just, you know, grist for the mill in the publishing business, because, you know, tech books a lot of times become stale very quickly, and, you know, there's a million people writing these books, and, you know, it just didn't feel like a very good experience to me. I wanted to have more control over the stuff I was writing. And as Apple got into these media-rich books, I took to that like a duck to water, because, and then I started this Max Barkey field guide series. I've got 7 of them out now, plus like 4 or 5 video field guide, which are very extensive screencasts. And I love these books because, number one, I can embed rich media in them. They're full of screencasts and video and multimedia stuff, which makes it a better experience for someone reading, especially if you're trying to learn about technology. If you can look over the guy's shoulder and see how the app works or how to do the thing he's talking about by watching his screen, that's a lot easier. And the second thing is you can update the books. Like the book we're going to talk about today just came out 2 or 3 months ago, but it's already got version 1.1 out. I've already updated it as information changes. So, and then finally, I guess I like having control over my voice. And, you know, it's a thing that I own entirely. It's not part of a big publishing company. It's my thing. It swims or it sinks based on my own merit and not anybody else.
And I think, I mean, you have to consider yourself being the cutting edge of these kind of multimedia presentations, because I don't know a whole lot of other folks, particularly in this space, who are producing these field guides kind of products such as you that integrate text and video and photos and what have you and audio to the extent that you're doing. It's really a living document.
Yeah, I think that's because I'm the only masochist out there. Well, it's hard. It's hard putting these things together.
Well, and you can certainly see when you dive into one of these products, you can certainly see, gee whiz, how much planning goes into this. And then how do you put these pieces together? Obviously, you've come to a system that works for you, but it really shows the extent and the work that you put into these products.
Thanks, Neil.
Now, I've purchased several of them. I don't have a full set of Max Barkey field guides. But before some of our audience abandons us, yes, I'm a Apple fanboy. David, you write almost exclusively about Apple products. But we should also mention you're the host, along with Katie Floyd, of the very popular Mac Power Users podcast, which really got me started in doing all this. But a lot of these products, I think, have value, even if you, say, are a Windows user, say, at work or even at home, but have, you know, some of these products, an iPhone or an iPad that you use along with your Windows-based computer. So I would think some of the field guides that you have written, and this newest one on the iPhone, certainly can be used by people who use a Windows-based system at work or at home.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Abraham Lincoln, I think, is the one credited with the saying that a lawyer's time is his stock in trade. And I think that that's true, more true now than it's ever been. I mean, I feel like as lawyers, we have to pay real attention to our workflows and how we do our work and find the time sucks in our lives and find ways to work around that. And the best way around problems with technology is, frankly, to get better at technology. And once you do that, actually, there is a tipping point where the technology actually makes you way more efficient and allows you to do your job better and hopefully get home to your family or, you know, take a vacation to Hawaii, not just work all the time. And the and that's my goal in doing this stuff, is kind of to hopefully show a few people the way to make the stuff work for them instead of the opposite.
So even though it's Apple-focused, I think several of your field guides could be used by just anybody. I'm thinking specifically, you wrote a field guide on going paperless, which was the first one that I got. And yeah, while there are tools in there that are Mac-specific, there are comparable tools in the Windows world. And a Windows user, I think, would get every bit of value out of reading the paperless field guide as a Mac user would.
Yeah, and that book actually does include some Windows tools because it was so universal. And really, the trick to paperless is getting the workflow down. It's not understanding the Mac or the PC. It's understanding what is a appropriate paperless workflow. How do you name files? What's your storage strategy? Another one like that is the presentations field guide.
I was going to say the presentation ones, yeah, for sure.
The first half of that book is platform agnostic. It doesn't really address any platform. It's just what makes a good presentation kind of stuff. That's the hippie part, as I say.
Well, can I confess that I thought that was the best part of the book and the most useful in from a lawyer's perspective?
It was my favorite part of the book to write. I mean, okay. I also if you're on an Apple, the second half of the book talks about some real power tips to apply that stuff I talk about in the first half and use it with Keynote. And frankly, even that stuff kind of carries over to PowerPoint. But you know, the real reason I wrote that book was for the first half of the book. I had to get it out of my system and write it down somewhere because I saw so many terrible presentations from lawyers.
Yeah, just to fill our audience in, the first half of the book addresses what makes a good presentation. And I feel like I go to so many conferences and I hear so many people put up their, or see so many people put up their slideshow. And I think, oh, please, can I just get them to read at least the first half of David's field guide on presentations? Because you see the problems repeated almost daily.
Yeah, I give a presentation several times at the ABA Tech Show. A couple of years ago, I did one with Paul Unger on the kind of presentation basics. And it was just amazing to me afterwards to have people come up and say, you know, I'd never thought of any of this. And as lawyers, so often standing in front of a group of people, whether it's a jury or shareholders or whatever, is how we pay for our shoes. It's really important to lawyers give some thought to this stuff. And there's science behind it. I mean, there's a way to make a presentation help you as opposed to be a source of agony for your listeners.
And help it to be persuasive.
Yeah.
I know I've seen a couple of attorneys who have gone to that step of using presentations in front of a jury. And in some cases, it's not as effective as they think it is because they're not following some of those guidelines and ideas that you present so well in your book on presentations.
Yeah, but I don't do jury work anymore. I've one of the ways I've been, you know, straddling this line of two things is I'm getting out of litigation. But I used to do a lot of litigation, and always two things always happened to me at the end of every trial. First of all, the opposing counsel would accuse me of being slick,
right,
and it was entirely because I gave good presentations through the whole, you know, thing. I would even, like, if I had a direct examination of an expert witness, I would set up a keynote presentation of that direct exam because I knew exactly which exhibit I would be going through. And it just was like butter, you know, going through that direct exam and having the jurors see the exhibits come up on the screen and whatever, you know, it just worked really well. So I always got accused of being slick. And then also at the end, I had at least one juror asking me for a copy of my presentation because they wanted to use something like that in their sales.
Exactly.
So, Yeah, that's good, though. See, when you stand up, you want them to sit up on the edge of their seat and say, all right, what's this guy going to do now? You know?
Yeah, and you want it to stand out. You want it to be memorable, because that's exactly what your charge is as a litigator. So let's talk a little bit about your new book. It's on the iPhone. Now, talk about trying to write about a moving target. I mean, the iPhone changes every year, just about, sometimes more than once a year. And so you truly are shooting at a moving target here. This is your first book having to do with a piece of hardware. Everything else was software or process related. This is the first one having to do with hardware. What was your thought process going into writing it?
Yeah, this was a hard book to write, frankly. Most of my books are a mile deep and an inch wide, like the paperless or presentations. It's all about one topic. This book is a mile wide and an inch deep. And I think that was the appropriate treatment for this, because we've all got these iPhones in our pockets, and it's enough compute power to send a man to the moon. I mean, if you look at in comparison to what they had for the moonshot.
I will just interrupt you there for a second. I actually worked at the space program. I worked at Goddard Space Flight Center here in Greenbelt, Maryland. My last manned mission was the Apollo-Soyuz test project, which was...
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And absolutely, we have more computing power in our hand than we did back then, putting a man on the moon or linking up Soviet astronauts and U.S. astronauts. It's unfathomable. The amount of computational power that we have.
So we've got that in our pocket, and most of us are ignoring it or using it very poorly. And the other thing we've got on the iPhone, and this is the secret to Apple's success. It's not Tim Cook. It's not even Steve Jobs. The secret to Apple's success is this amazing stable of third-party developers, people out there who take the toys that Apple makes and just write outstanding software for it. And that is the thing that makes using the Apple platform great, is no matter what your problem, there's probably some sort of app written by some person somewhere in the world that solves your exact problem. So what I wanted to do was empower people that have an iPhone in their pocket to use it with moonshot power, to be able to, whatever their problem is, to be able to yank it out of their pocket and solve it very quickly. So this book is partly a user guide. The beginning section talks about even things like, what's the best iPhone for you and what's the differences between them. But it also goes kind of deep into some of the built-in operating system tools, like the sharing button and the information that you can very much customize notifications and the information it provides to you to make it a very helpful assistant. I mean, one of the big pieces of advice I give in the book is spend some time and go through your notifications. I mean, people just leave all those notifications turned on, so you get 100 a day and you don't read any of them. What if you just got 5 notifications a day, but they were the most important ones that allowed you to make your practice run better? This is all stuff in your power. So I explain how to do all that stuff. And then the second, probably 2/3 of the book, is a very opinionated buyer's guide. And it goes through by categories of app. There's 45 chapters in the book. So there's things like word processing and writing and spreadsheets and reading news and just about anything you could do with an iPhone. There's a chapter on it. There's a chapter on calculators. And what I did is I spent, this book took so long to write because I went and bought 1 million apps, and I was going through all the different apps in each category and finding the good ones, the truly good ones. I didn't spend any time in the book writing about the stuff that I rejected. I just wrote about the stuff that I thought was useful to people. Yeah. So as an example, in the calculators chapter, there's a calculator that's good for people that are doing like business finance. There's a calculator that's good for people that are doing engineering. And, you can go through and see that stuff. And then there's a whole bunch of rich media. So for a lot of the apps I recommend, there's screencasts, which are little videos I made of me using the actual app so you can see it in action before you buy it. It was quite a project putting it all together, though. The whole book ended up, I think, over 450 pages with something like 65,000 words plus over 2 hours of video. I literally ran out of room. Apple has a limit of 2 gigabytes for an ebook, and I pushed it. It's something like 1.998 or something. I mean, I got it right up to the hairy end there.
This episode of The Law Entrepreneur is sponsored by Daylight. Daylight is the Mac CRM and case management tool I've been using for years to manage my practice. If you're feeling swamped trying to keep track of cases and clients, but you don't want to pay the hefty price tag of something like Salesforce or other legal-specific tools, I recommend you give Daylight a look. Daylight helps me prioritize my day. It helps me keep track of my clients, cases, documents, emails, calendars, to-dos, and reminders, all in one place. The case management part of Daylight makes it really easy to organize all the details and work for each case so things are done on time. The best part of Daylight is that it lets you work offline. You don't need an internet connection to pull up case details or info about a client like with other CRMs and case management tools. And new in Daylight is their Zapier integration, so you can automate things like pulling new leads from a contact form on your website right into Daylight. And for techies like me, you know that integration with tools like Zapier is really fundamental to making something like Daylight work the way you want it to work. So to learn how Daylight can help you grow your practice, visit marketcircle.com/daylight. And be sure to let them know you heard about Daylight through The Law Entrepreneur to get a 50% discount on your first month subscription. That's Daylight by Market Circle. The legal environment is more competitive than ever, and small law firms are feeling the pinch. With over 1.3 million attorneys in the United States and counting, it can be hard to stand out from the crowd. And that's why Spotlight Branding helps lawyers become unforgettable. Spotlight Branding is a different kind of internet marketing company. They don't put their clients on the SEO hamster wheel, and they don't ask them to burn thousands of dollars on speculative pay-per-click advertising. Instead, they're focused on the fundamentals of legal marketing that have worked for dozens upon dozens of years. They use the internet to build a premium brand for solo and small firm lawyers like myself, and they put systems in place to create top-of-mind awareness, allowing their clients to maximize the referrals and repeat business. It's the smart way to grow your law firm. To get more information, visit spotlightbranding.com/TLE, as in The Law Entrepreneur, and receive a special gift from our friends there at Spotlight Branding. And if you plan on attending the AVO Lawyernomics Conference in Las Vegas later this month, as I am planning to do so, stop by their booth, the Spotlight Branding booth. Mention our podcast, and you'll receive a special gift there as well. So thanks again to our friends at Spotlight Branding .com for sponsoring this episode of The Law Entrepreneur.
I'd planned from the very beginning, but I started just writing down the things I wanted to cover. And then over time, as I worked on the mind map, it organically started to coalesce. Yeah. And eventually, I think it came out just the way it should have been, but it just took a while for me to get it there. And then it was a question of finding the right apps to cover. And, you know, the arduous process of doing all the writing and getting all that video assembled. And it's, like you said, it's always changing. I'm already in version 1.1. One of the apps I covered in the original version got a significant update. So I did an update of the book, redoing that section. And of course, there's always a couple typos and things when you do the first release of a book. But and I intend to do another update to this book after Apple releases the next version of iOS. You know, as we record this, I'm heading up to San Jose for the Worldwide Developer Conference. But by September, we'll have a new version of iOS, and I'm going to update whatever the new features are in the book.
And supposedly, new phones as well.
Yeah, I mean, you can count on that. Apple's, yeah. I mean, that's how they pay the bills. Every year, there's a new iPhone in September.
In time for the December rush.
Yeah.
I think one of the challenges that you must have had is the fact that, if I'm writing a book and I anticipate it being published by a traditional publisher, I know that people are going to be reading it either in hardback form or soft cover form, and I can anticipate the user experience. But in this case, for you, you had to address, well, where are they going to be reading this book and how are they going to be reading it? Is it going to be on an iPad? Is it going to be on their computer, on an iPhone, on a Kindle device? Is it all these questions, and that had to influence how you put the book together.
Yeah, I mean, the I sell this book through the iBooks store. So if you have a Mac, iPad, or iPhone, that's the best place to buy it because it incorporates all the media right in one file. But I've always been very careful about the layout in these books. And ideally, they're really made best for viewing on an iPad or a Mac because I have tons of additional graphics and artwork in there. I spend a lot of time on the typography. And the way the tools work that I use to make the book, I have control over every pixel on the page. So everything lays out just the way I want it to lay out. So when you look at a page, you're going to see screenshots. They're going to be where I put them. There's going to be a button there to go to the app store if you want to get the app. That's something I control. So I really like that. But with this this book in particular, I also wanted to make a friendly iPhone reading experience because it's about the iPhone. I felt like it should be, you know, readable on the iPhone. And so I spent a lot of time on this particular book getting a iPhone-friendly layout. And the way I did that is it's got a separate mode where it puts the words on the screen. You can just scroll down the screen to read the book. It's got a really powerful table of contents that you can access with one tap so you can navigate around the book super easily. And I recorded all of the screencasts in the portrait mode on the iPhone. So even if you're just reading this book on your iPhone, you're going to get the full benefit of all that rich media, and it's going to be something that makes sense because it looks just like it's sitting on your iPhone. And that was another big time sink in terms of getting this book together, but I'm really happy with the way it came out.
Yeah, you've handled it marvelously, and I just think it's the gold standard by which all other such books are going to be measured because it is a delight. I can read it just as you said. I was at the motor vehicle department this morning and I was looking through the book on my phone. But over coffee this morning, I was reading it on my old original iPad mini. So it works seamlessly across both platforms. And that's, you're to be commended for that. Was there one part that gave you, you know, more struggles than you thought in terms of writing the book?
No, not really. I mean, I'm getting pretty good at this. I've been doing it a while. I use the iBooks author platform, which makes beautiful books, but sometimes it's a little buggy, so that can make you crazy. The main trick with this one was like it was like herding cats because there's so much information to cover and it's always changing. So it was really a challenge to kind of get it organized. But once I figured out what I was going to do, you know, like I said earlier with the mind map, then it was just a question of moving the cursor across the page and, you know, making those screencasts.
And I think also you probably have the challenge of, you know, how much time do I devote to this product or this app in this category? So for instance, you know, you did a chapter on task managers, and we know from Mac Sparky and just from Mac Power users that you're And from the fact that you've done quite a lot of work with the Omni Group, that OmniFocus is your personal task manager of choice. So you could have written and have done an entire book on OmniFocus. So the challenge of trying to limit it for this book, I'm sure, must have been something that gave you reason to pause.
Well, it was good because I tried to take a different approach in this book. This book is not all my personal preferences. It's more like I kind of felt like make it like a flow chart for the reader. It's like, okay, you want to do task management, you know, and you want to get a little better at it. If you read that chapter, I categorize types of task managers. There's the real simple ones. It's just a list with a checkbox and a list, which for a lot of people is enough. For most lawyers, that's probably not enough. And then there's the category of task managers that are collaborative heavy, you know, where you want to have a whole office sharing the same list. And I talk about some of the best options for that if you're carrying an iPhone around. And then there's the more powerful task managers that are like OmniFocus and Things and some of those apps. And I cover those as well. And I used every one of them. I spent time, you know, that's like I said, the research into this takes a long time. And I wanted to only recommend things that I would be comfortable with. I don't want readers buying my book and getting something and being unsatisfied or, you know, getting a bad app. I mean, maybe it doesn't scratch the exact itch they had, but at least I want them to have good, stable apps from reputable developers. And so I tried to write that chapter as a flowchart so you would only use as complex of a task manager as you need. The fact that I use OmniFocus doesn't mean that a lot of people don't need OmniFocus. And that's kind of the approach I took to almost every chapter, really.
Okay. Interesting. So what I think the thing that to me is the crown jewel of this book, and this book maybe more so than some of your others, but certainly is true for your other books as well, is the quality of the screencasts in the book. Tell our audience a little bit about what a screencast is and just a little bit about the process of how you generated it, the ones in the book.
Yeah, so a screencast is, it's a video of someone's device. Like I've done them in the past of my Mac, I've done them on the iPad. This one has most of them on the iPhone. So like if I'm going to do a chapter on weather apps, I will make little videos of some of the apps I'm recommending so you can see them in action. And I'll be operating the app and I'll be talking at the same time. So it's just like looking over my shoulder and me showing you an app over lunch. When I did the one for navigation, I picked some of the best navigation apps and I took a trip to Disneyland, you know, because I live in Southern California. And then I walked through all the features of the apps and how to use them as I was taking the trip. My wife was driving, obviously. And you record that. So it's a recording. It's like watching someone's screen. And then I do a voice annotation over the top. There's like a voice track. And it's a great way to learn how to use technology. It's so much better. I mean, back when I was writing books for Wiley, I remember I wanted to explain how to do what they call a sparse image. On the Mac, you can actually make an encrypted mini package drive on your drive. So if you have data that you want to particularly protect, you can package it up into this little like mini package and you can apply a password to it. So it's like encryption on encryption. So, and for lawyers, stuff like that's always useful. So I tried to explain that in a book I wrote for Wiley. It took like 6 pages and I had like 5 screenshots. And I'm not sure that people who read that could figure it out. Whereas when I wrote the paperless field guide, I did a 2-minute video on it and I just created one. And now anybody who watches that video could do the exact same thing. That's the advantage of a screencast.
It's so interesting. Now, is there a lot of post-production after you record the initial screencast that you do?
I've estimated it takes about an hour per minute of video, and I'm better at it than I used to be. I've done many of these screencasts over the years. I also do them sometimes for app developers when they have new apps come out. They hire me to do them for them. But it's just very time intensive. You have to get it just right. You have to have data on the screen that you can share. You have to, you know, go through and make the little edits and get the voiceover right. It's a thing. So it's not necessarily easy, but it's easier than it used to be.
But you didn't farm any of that out. You did that yourself.
Yeah, I always do that myself. Yeah, see, I mean,
well, it gives you the control that you desired.
Yeah, that's one of my problems, Neil, frankly, is I can't let go of control.
Well, I can see that specifically with something as creative as this. David, I could spend the rest of the day talking to you about the iPhone field guide. But it's really a visual experience. People really need to see it themselves. Tell our audience how they can go about getting the iPhone field guide and, in fact, all of the McSparky field guides.
Yeah, the best way really is just go maxsparky.com on your browser, and down the right side of my blog page is a little thumbnail for each one of my books. If you click on any one of them, it gets you to the place you can buy it either from the iBook store or the PDF version if you're in a country that doesn't support iBooks. Yeah. And they're all there. Just go to maxsparky.com. If you want to drill directly to the iPhone field guide, it's maxsparky.com/iPhone. If you're in iBooks, you can search my name, David Sparks, and you'll see all of my books in there as well.
Perfect.
So there's a lot of ways to get to it, but maxsparky.com is probably the easiest.
Well, we'll make sure we have all of that in our notes, and I want to thank you for taking the time out of your what clearly is a very busy day to join us here on The Law Entrepreneur, and can't wait to have you back.
It's my pleasure, Neil, and I really appreciate all the friendship and support you've given me over the years as I've been trying to make a go of this stuff.
Well, it's been my pleasure. Once again, I'd like to thank our friends at Market Circle, the makers of Daylight and Spotlight Branding, for being sponsors of today's podcast. Market Circles, as the makers of Daylight, provide the tool that I use to manage my cases, my clients, my calendar, my to-dos, the emails, and they do so all in one app that stays with me on my Mac, my iPhone, and my iPad. I use Daylight on my own in a solo environment, but you can also use it in a team. You can use Daylight to track the status of cases and delegate tasks to one another on your team, and you can see everyone's schedule all without having to interrupt anyone. Daylight is one of the tools that I use to stay organized, and it increases my efficiency, and therefore it only stands to reason that it'll do the same for you and your team if you use it in a broader environment. So visit marketcircle.com/daylight to try Daylight free for 30 days, and be sure to let them know that you heard about Daylight through The Law Entrepreneur in order to get a 50% discount on your first monthly subscription. Also, our friends at Spotlight Branding, as always, have been very helpful in sponsoring this podcast. You know, I trust them to manage the internet presence for my law firm, and I recommend them to solo lawyers every chance I get. They built a great website for me, and they use video marketing, social media, email marketing, and more to help keep me top of mind with my referral network. So visit www.spotlightbranding.com to learn more. They're even offering a free gift for podcast listeners, which you can access at spotlightbranding.com/TLE, as in The Law Entrepreneur. So spotlightbranding.com/TLE to access your free gift. And as always, make sure that you visit our website, www.thelawentrepreneur.com, to see everything that's going on with the podcast and subscribe to our newsletter so that you can stay in the know and be the first on your block, so to speak, to gain insight into what's going on here. So once again, thanks for being here this time around. I appreciate your listenership. Hope to see you again next week on The Law Entrepreneur.